This is The Drive.
I don't understand what the problem is here.
With Carmichael Dave, Katie Christensen, and Nate Goodyear.
New morning, team.
Put the top down. Rev your engine.
Say, what goes on this morning?
Welcome to The Drive.
I don't know if I want to say, wow, I really respect that about you, or if I want to say, gosh, that is so stupid.
Come on, man. Wake the up. The Drive.
His mouth.
Here we go with Dave, Katie, and Nate.
That keg is almost tapped.
Yeah.
And they're going to get every last drop out of it.
Broadcasting live from the Coors Light Studios. Coors Light, with great beer comes great responsibility. Now the drive continues with Dave, Katie, and Nate.
The beautiful, lovely, talented, and always great to look at. Nate Goodyear sitting across from me, Katie Christensen to my left. Kate Johnson behind the glass. It is a drive, Sports 1140 KHDK. Your
You're
calls.
Pretty too, Katie.
339. She's
thank
okay.
You.
339-1140, 1-800-920-1140. Somebody texted her and was like, oh, you guys with the innuendos on Katie. I texted him back. I was like, Katie's actually worse than the both of us combined.
I really am.
Get over it.
I am a horrible individual like that.
I wouldn't say that.
I am.
She just likes to lob them up for us. That's all.
Yeah.
She's a good sport.
Josh Martin will join us from Bleacher Report here in a couple minutes to talk NBA. Hey, can I give you my quick, I don't know anything about what I'm talking about, which is normal, but really apropos when it comes to hockey take on yesterday's game. Because I did watch the first period before the game started at 5, the Sharks game, and then the Warriors Thunder at 6. I watched the first period. Again, guy who doesn't, again, I don't know what I'm talking about. But
keep saying it.
Because I don't, and I don't want to be made fun of by hockey fans. It looked like the Sharks had no business being on the same ice with the Penguins in the first period. I don't know if it's because they were nervous, first time in the Cup Finals. I don't know what it was, but it looked like the Penguins were playing at three times the speed of the Sharks. And at the end of the period, when it was 2-0, I found myself going, "I'm really surprised it's not 3 or 4-0." It was ridiculous.
I think what happened there, Dave, is just like you said. Penguins were a little bit too fast.
Well, nerves.
Sidney Crosby, you got
dear Lord.
Jenny Malkin. Those guys are good.
They're very good.
To speak to it, that's what I read, though, is that right out of the gate, it literally looked like the Penguins' speed was just too much for the Sharks to handle.
It was too fast.
And then they were able to kind of get it back later on in the game.
Then they come back, and they the Sharks end up evening it up. And then as soon as the Thunder – and here's something else I learned, too. I have a setup where I can watch more than one game at once. I cannot do that with basketball and hockey.
No, yeah.
I tried and really turned off the hockey game.
It's like you can watch two games at once if you're watching like basketball and
baseball. Football, whatever.
Yeah.
Yes.
I mean, anything where there's stoppages in play. But those two are like constant.
I've learned about hockey very quickly that you can't. I don't even like looking. I was making a shish kebab last night. I didn't even want to look down while I was skewering the meat.
Yeah.
Because away from the hockey game.
Yeah. It's kind of like soccer, like you think at first, there's not a lot of goals, whatever, I'll just have it on in the background, and then that's the second you look away, boom, goal. Yeah. You're like, well, I've missed the only damn action of the game!
So our guest last week, our hockey guest, Kevin Allen from USA Today, do you remember, because we asked him, who is a better matchup for the Sharks?
Yeah.
Do you remember what he said?
No.
I believe he said the bad one.
Was the Penguins because of their speed?
Yes,
that's what he said.
About that.
And he was damned right.
Yeah.
Good job, Kay Allen. Because they did not look. That didn't look. Props to the Sharks for bringing it back. And hey, they lost game one on the road. So what? Whatever. Ended up being a good game. And maybe they learned something there.
Mm-hmm.
Because let's be honest, you take away that first period.
Right, it's looking
Sharks
pretty good.
Sharks outscored them 2-1.
And even, I'm kind of like you, I was bouncing back and forth. The majority of what I caught was most of the third period. But even then, when the score was tied at 2, it appeared that the Penguins were controlling most of the action. They were getting most of the shots. And even though, now I should just look it up in front of me, but the Sharks goaltender, for crying out loud, his freaking name, he gave up 3 goals, but he still played well. He was stopping some shots in the third period. He was not getting any help from his defenders at all.
That's tough when you're the one that... that's a lot of pressure.
Yeah.
I mean, you're on an island there.
You
got to
do it at
help.
All.
Yeah.
All of it. We'll see where the rest of it takes. Those are just my couple of observations as a non-hockey watcher, much like
you. Got to mention it. From the 916, just realized there's a potential for Warriors, Sharks, Raiders, and Giants to all win their respective sports championships this year.
Raiders.
Easy, guys.
Yeah. We'll slow down there. Hold on. Kirk, you're on KHDK.
Hey, good morning, Katie, Nate, and Dave. How are you guys?
Good morning.
Hi.
I have a question for you, Katie. This is regarding the comment you made just a short time ago about when your two best skilled players tend to be non-thinkers, mm-hmm. that your likelihood of success is going to be much, much, much lower. I think that you chose a different way to say that. But, excuse me, putting that in context with the Kings, I think we all agree that if Cousins sticks around, he would be, at least if not the most skilled, he certainly would fall into one of the two most skilled players that the Kings would have. So applying the same concept, we would then be agreeing that the likelihood for Kings to have success would be minimized. Would you mind giving me some of your thoughts on that?
Elaborating on whether or not Cousins is a thinker of the game?
No, I think that, you know, a 50-50 chance, I think, with Cousins being with us. Obviously, if he's with us this incoming season, that would lower our likelihood for success based upon the comment you spoke of earlier.
I think, and I'm trying to understand, you know, where he's coming from with that, because it's, you know, obviously my comments on the Thunder and with Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook really not being able, being cerebral players and realizing what keeps you, what gets you wins and being able to repeat the behavior, basically. I think Cousins' biggest thing as in terms of thinking the game, his biggest hang up is the emotional side of it. And this isn't breaking news.
Sure.
I mean, his thing isn't the thinking of the game. His is to be able to calm down his thinking when things go south, right? Because if he doesn't get a call.
Emotional discipline.
Yes. That is, to me, the biggest hang up with him. I think he understands the game really well, but that's what derails him, is his emotional discipline. That's the best way to put it.
Hey, Nate saw the point. Nate put his head in his hands.
Nate saw the point when he was banging his head on the table.
You guys, we had a great Game 7 last night. Yeah. The Sharks are in the Stanley Cup Finals. We're about to start the NBA Finals. The Giants are white hot. The A's look like they could be exciting this year.
You saying you don't want to talk about DeMarcus Cousins?
I do not give a damn about DeMarcus Cousins and his attitude right now.
Yeah, because we're going to have plenty of time to talk about that later.
Yeah, we got all summer. Yeah. That's true. Hey, yes. Right. Steven, you're on KHDK.
Hey, good morning, guys.
Good morning.
Yeah, so we were talking about Oklahoma City earlier, and I'm a Sacramento Kings fan. You know, I'm out here and everything. But I just think that Oklahoma City outplayed the Warriors, because it's the first time I've seen the Warriors kind of look shook.
Yeah.
Like, everybody wanted to talk about Steph Curry being hurt, but he wasn't hurt when he's yelling, "We're not going home." And, you know, so I think he didn't play as good as he should have played. I think Donovan made a bad decision last time, taking Robertson out of the last game, because Klay Thompson went crazy against Deion Waiters.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, I think Deion Waiters, he's the one that, like you said, we need a backup or something. I think they need to get rid of Deion Waiters, or, you know, let him go, because he kind of shot him out the game. You know, Westbrook and Durant are going to do that in the fourth quarter. They just kind of just melt down again, you know, in the last.
So, Steven, is your stance that Oklahoma City was the better team in this series and they ended up giving it away?
I think they outplayed the Warriors. I think the Warriors are maybe a better team overall, but they got outplayed and maybe outcoached.
Mm-hmm.
But their two superstars gave the game away the last 2 minutes of the last three games.
Yeah.
You know, because they were up 10 points every game. The last 2 minutes of the last three games, Westbrook, like, it was like 6-point swing. Westbrook would make a turnover, shoot an air ball three, and then come down. Klay would hit a three.
Do you think Do you think Kevin Durant gave away the end of last night's game?
Not last night's game.
I mean, Kevin Durant was amazing last night at the end of the game.
Yeah, but the fact that they were in the position where he needed to be amazing for them to have a shot at getting out of it.
When we're talking about Durant specifically, and he certainly didn't play a perfect series, but God. Not only did he have 25 or more in each game, which is one thing, but I thought he played under control 98% of the time. I thought
he was the one that played well.
He was the leader. He was the one yelling at Roberson to shoot the ball, shoot the damn ball, screaming at him.
You know what? Steven did bring up a good point that we haven't really gotten to. Do you think that Steve Kerr was outcoached in this series?
I think outcoached and outplayed, and I think that's what's interesting about this. Did they choke? Didn't they choke? Blah, blah, blah. Because I think that's high, an obvious statement alert. I think it's that's highly predicated on who won the series.
Yeah.
History,
yeah.
You know, the winners write history. I think if the Thunder had won last night, all we're doing tonight is we're talking about how Steph Curry choked. Is he really an MVP? Steve Kerr was outcoached. Draymond Green.
Guess what, though? Steve Kerr was outcoached. He was outcoached.
I agree with you, but he won the series.
Right. I mean,
yeah, he won the series because
he brought his team back from 3-1.
Yeah, he won the series because he's got great players, and he's not a horrible coach. I'm not saying that.
Sure, I understand.
I will say.
He's trying to say give Billy Donovan some credit.
Billy
because
Donovan
I'm on
proved
board
a lot. Yeah, because he got where he did with the fact that the guy that's running point for him needs to be his main job is to keep him under control and to remind him over and over and over again what he needs to do for this team to win, right? And guess what? He didn't get the memo in game 7 of that series. But I think there's a big difference in terms of how the Warriors have looked from this year to last year. And this is just my personal take on it. Steve Kerr is a very good coach. He's still very young. He's just blessed with the fact that he has phenomenal players. But there's a big difference to me in terms of his coaching strategy and how it's worked out in the playoffs this season versus last season when he had a guy like Alvin Gentry as his associate head coach, who is a very experienced head coach in terms of game management and who needs to be in. I do not think that Steve Kerr should be playing 10 people in the playoffs. We're in the Western Conference Finals, and you're playing a 10 to 11 man rotation. Yes, that's what got you there. That's what got you to, you know, through the regular season and got you to the playoffs. Every coach in their right mind shortens their rotation during the playoffs.
But some would argue that the fact that he had better rested star players is why they took control in the final three games.
Yeah, I mean, does that come back to bite
them? I don't agree.
Having too big of a rotation, is that something that could actually hurt them in a series?
I think you have to shorten it up.
Let's ask a professional unlike us, Josh Martin, Bleacher Report. You can get him at Josh Martin NBA, just like it sounds. Josh, I know it's a busy day for you. Thanks for joining us. It's Dave, Katie, and Nate. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Well, we're arguing and having opinions and great takes and all that, you know, as we do on Sports Talk Radio. Let's start with the thing we were just talking about. Did Billy Donovan outcoach Steve Kerr in this series?
I think if Billy Donovan had outcoached Steve Kerr in this series, then the Oklahoma City Thunder might still be alive in these playoffs. You know, I think there's something to that. Not that Steve Kerr was so superior in this series, because, you know, it's still a 7-game series and his team had to eke it out and had to come from behind from down 3-1 and had to erase deficits in the final few games. But, you know, I think if Billy Donovan was such a superior coach, he would have found a way to close out a 3-1 series by going to the NBA Finals. He would have gotten his guys to do what they did to take that commanding 3-1 series lead to close out the series over the final three games, have them play more physical, have them use their athleticism and their size and their length to greater advantage. And clearly that didn't work out. I don't necessarily put that on Billy D per se, but I don't think that the fact that the Thunder had a pretty good series, although they didn't win, would put Billy Donovan. I don't think that puts him ahead of Steve Kerr by any stretch.
You know, Josh, I understand what you're saying, and that's generally my take on things. It's like, okay, a team wins a series, the other coach outcoached him. You know what I'm saying? Like, you have to give credit where credit's due. I just look at the fact that Billy Donovan has to coach Russell Westbrook, who I think is a phenomenal talent, but he gets in his own way most of the time. So I think that the success that Billy Donovan has had through the playoffs itself is to continually be able to remind him in different ways of what it takes for them to win, which does not include Russell Westbrook taking the game on his back all the time.
See, I think you say Billy Donovan has to coach Russell Westbrook. I think Billy Donovan would say he gets to coach Russell Westbrook because he is such a phenomenal player. And right. I get it. He's a fiery guy. He makes mistakes, and sometimes those mistakes cost his team dearly. But I think with a guy like Russell Westbrook, you take the bad with the good because there is so much good that he brings to the table that if you try to wrap him up to limit the amount of bad things that he does, I think ultimately that could take away from how much good he's able to contribute on a night-to-night basis.
So rather than comparing Billy Donovan to the other guy, then, how about we do this based on the expectations set during the Scott Brooks era? And looking back after 1 year, would you say the Thunder got what they wanted when they essentially swapped those two coaches?
No. I think they wanted to win the title, and they had good reason to believe that they could win the title. We saw that in this series. We saw that in these playoffs, how the Oklahoma City Thunder came together, how they were able to, that supporting cast with Steven Adams and Serge Ibaka and his Kanter, Andre Robertson, even Dion Waiters at some times, these guys really congealed around Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook into a nice supporting cast that does the things you need guys to do around those two. That is rebound the basketball, play defense, pass, and do the little things to help your team to win. I think the Thunder reasonably expected that they would be competing for a championship, but all things considered, I don't think they are necessarily down and disappointed. I think they should feel pretty good about where they are as a franchise, but I don't think they'll be totally satisfied with a loss in the Western Conference Finals.
That's reasonable, and I agree with that. But so this seems stupid, but I want to just kind of follow out this logical thought process here from, say, the Thunder ownership perspective. I think I know the answer here, but not meeting expectations. Scott Brooks got canned for that. I mean, they're not really going to talk about Billy Donovan, right?
No.
It doesn't matter that much. They just didn't meet expectations.
I think with Scott Brooks, it was more of a long-term fit sort of thing. With Billy Donovan, he has a very nice first year, but I don't think that one year where they win 55 games and they get so close to the NBA Finals, I don't think that's going to cost Billy Donovan his job at all. I think it's more of a job well done, not a job completely done, but for this year, a pretty good job.
Bleacher Report's Josh Martin joining us on the drive. Multiple choice question for you. The Thunder were up 3-1. Josh, did the Thunder, A, choke? B, did the Warriors slap the series back by taking it? Or C, are you inclined to say a little bit of both?
I'm always inclined to equivocate a little bit, so I'll go with a little bit of both here. If you're the Thunder, you know, you're not just going to waltz your way to a series victory after going up 3-1, not against a Golden State team that has as many options as it does, that has the experience that it does, and that can get hot at a moment's notice. That's what we have come to expect from the Warriors, that they can put on these runs because they can shoot and their shooters can get hot. And we saw that from Klay Thompson in Game 6 and Steph Curry down the stretch in Game 6. We saw that from Steph in Game 7. We've seen that from the Splash Brothers all year long for years and years now. These guys can't be simply put away by a daunting deficit. You have to put out that fire. So I think as much as you could say Oklahoma City might have choked it away in part, it couldn't have been to a worse team for that to happen, that the Warriors would be able to take advantage of a situation like that.
Josh, I want to get in a little bit to the finals, the upcoming series against the Cavs and the Warriors. When you look at the Western Conference Finals, I think most people would agree and say that the Warriors just didn't really look like themselves. They won the series and they did what they needed to do, but we have such high expectations for the product that they have out on the floor. And then you look at the rematch against the Cavs, who, by the way, now have a healthy LeBron, Kyrie, and Kevin Love. So when you look at this series and you add that in the fact that they're healthy, and the Warriors didn't look like themselves in the Western Conference Finals, what are your thoughts and predictions for this final series?
I still think Golden State is the favorite. I would pick Golden State in 7 in this series. I know that having Kevin Love and Kyrie Irving will make a big difference for the Cavaliers offensively. I'm worried more about what Cleveland is going to do defensively to stop the Warriors, to stop that small ball lineup that, okay, maybe it's not the death lineup anymore, but it's still a very effective group. And when you look at the Cavs and what Kyrie Irving and Kevin Love bring to the table, they've helped the Cavs in a lot of ways in this postseason to become a three-point shooting machine. But I don't think anyone in their right mind is going to try to get into a three-point shooting contest with the Golden State Warriors and think they actually have a shot to win under the
not even J.R. Smith.
Well, J.R. Smith, I probably think he could beat anybody in a shootout. But as a team, the Cavs would be hard pressed to get into a run and gun 3-point shooting series with the Warriors and find themselves come out ahead.
Josh Martin joining us on KHTK. Well, Josh, you mentioned that they don't want to get into, like, stylistically, you don't want to start shooting threes with the Warriors. But in terms of personnel, lineups, how do you see them going about combating that lineup of death, so to speak? I mean, are they going to try to match that, I guess, with a smaller lineup? Or do you think that they'll try to do something different and make the Warriors cater to them?
Well, I think the Cavs can work it both ways. They can have an all-shooting lineup out there and still be pretty big. If you stick Channing Frye at center, Kevin Love at the four, LeBron at the three, that gives them a lot of options offensively. But you can also see it going the other way. We've seen LeBron play some four, Kevin Love play some five, maybe Tristan Thompson play five out there and stick three shooters with Kyrie and J.R. Smith and maybe some Iman Shumpert. Maybe you want to go with more playmaking and put Dellavedova out there. I think Tyronn Lue is going to have some interesting options to work with, some of which he has had the opportunity to run out there over the course of this season into the playoffs. It's really going to be, I think ultimately it'd be best for the Cavs to counteract small with big, though, especially since the Cavs going big doesn't take away from their offensive potential.
One more thing for you, Josh. Mm-hmm. Is it possible when we're all said and done here, how possible is it that the Thunder, the second best team in the NBA, and the Warriors roll through the Cavs, unlike they did with the Thunder?
I think it's very possible. And by very possible, I don't mean more than 50%, but still very possible that certainly that Oklahoma City was the second best team in the NBA. When you have Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook in the same locker room, you got to figure that that's going to be one of the best teams. And they really took it to Golden State a lot through that series. The Warriors, got to give them credit for surviving physically, mentally, really surviving the storm and coming out ahead there in that series. It was pretty equal for the most part. And the Cavaliers, they're talented. They do a lot of things really well. I just don't know how they're going to be able to defend the Warriors consistently enough and get enough stops, keep these guys out of transition and out of getting those quick three-pointers enough to make this, to really have a strong shot in the series. I still think it could go seven, but if it goes seven, that's still a game seven at Oracle Arena where the Warriors are so tough to beat.
Josh Martin, an NBA writer with the Bleacher Report, joining us this morning on The Drive. Now, before we let you go, Josh, I know that you're about to have a very busy summer talking about whether or not Kevin Durant is going to stay or go. So I have to ask you that question before we leave. Which way are you inclined to lean right now?
I'm guessing he's going to stay. He sees how good this team is around him. He sees that there's this young supporting cast that really sort of came into its own over the course of these playoffs. I think the Thunder found something. I think he would probably be inclined to believe that with Billy Donovan, they can do big things. And from his own personal perspective, it makes more sense financially to re-sign with Oklahoma City, at least on a two-year deal with a second-year option. He can then hit return to free agency in 2017 when the cap will be even higher and he can make even more money. So I think from every perspective, it makes sense for him to stay in Oklahoma City. And I think that's the way that he'll ultimately go.
At Josh Martin NBA, Josh writes for Bleacher Report. Check out his stuff there. Appreciate the time. Thank you, sir.
My pleasure. Thanks.
Have
for
a good one.
And we'll also, in addition to talking to Josh, you know, I want to talk to at some point later this week after he catches his breath. We'll have to talk to Sam Amick, who was at in both Oakland and Oklahoma City for this entire series. And on top of that, he had a very interesting interview with Klay Thompson after game six from the back of a golf cart going from the locker room to the media room. And then I think if there is anything, if you could call anybody in America an expert in the media on Kevin Durant, I think it's Sam. Sam has a
he's great, dialed in.
He's very dialed in with that Durant camp. And
well, he just wrote an article today for USA Today talking about kind of some of his comments about staying, going, leaving, all of that stuff.
Yeah, so I think those insights there, too, will help. Plus, we have a couple days to preview those NBA Finals, which we certainly will. I can't wait. Starts Thursday, day after tomorrow, and promises to be an exciting, exciting series, so it'll probably be a sweep.
You know what? I bet that LeBron didn't even watch Game 7. He was probably watching, like, Call of Duty.
Well, he doesn't
watch Call of Duty.
Yeah,
he doesn't
watch sport. He doesn't read it. read papers or watch sports.
No, he doesn't.
That's what he said.
Yeah.
He's probably filming a commercial.
Yeah.
When we get back, we have, and rightfully so, for 2.5 hours gone over this series. When we get back, let me say we switch gears a little bit. There was a story that hit over the weekend of a soccer player that was kidnapped.
Yeah.
And this story is crazy. We will bring it to you next and how it all turned out right here on The Drive. Sports 1140 KHDK. Join KHDK for UFC 199er this Saturday. Draft Inside Arena Softball, 8288 Industrial Avenue in Roseville. Michael Bisping going after Luke Rockhold's title belt. Who cares? Because Uriah Faber... Now we kind of care. Luke Rockhold's Northern California. Uriah Faber is fighting Dominic Cruz, the third of their trilogy, 1-1 right now, in what might be his final attempt at finally getting a UFC championship bout. 8288 Industrial Avenue in Roseville, as I said, there'll be great food and drink specials. Also, free batting cages and field play, all for a $10 cover. That's it. For more info, get to arenasoftball.com. So as we said before the break over the weekend, Alan Pulido is a Mexican soccer star, and he had quite the interesting – that's the horrible word to use. He had a horrible weekend, Nate.
Well, the guy is basically Batman.
Yeah.
Starting on late Saturday night / early Sunday morning, multiple sources reported Alan Pulido, 25 years old, currently playing for Olympiacos in Greece. Mm-hmm. He's been a member of the Mexican national team and used to play for a team there called Tigres. He's not going to be on the Copa America roster for Mexico this year because of a dispute.
Right.
Anyway, they're reporting early on Sunday morning, he's in his hometown of Ciudad Victoria, taking an off season where he's, confiscated.
There you go. He was confiscated.
Yes.
He was nabbed.
My goodness. He was grabbed by armed kidnappers outside of a restaurant in his hometown early on in the morning. That was reported Sunday morning. His brother reported the kidnapping, confirmed it to Medio Tiempo, a newspaper down there, saying he disappeared in the early hours. His girlfriend was also taken. But was later...
Oh, see, I read that she was not taken.
She
and that
was released later by the alleged kidnapper.
I want to stop at this point and compliment you, by the way. I just want to say his pronunciation has been beautiful.
Okay. Is that why you guys asked me to do this?
I'm going to call BS on that.
Uh-huh.
Since you pointed it out, it's Olympiacos.
It looks like Olympiacos.
You want me to do Spanish or Greek, okay?
It's Olympiacos because I played over there, but it's also Ciudad.
Spelled Olympiacos. This is America.
See you, Dad, if you're a gringo.
See you, Dad.
See you, Dad.
Speak the language.
But the weird thing is, Nate, like, I've read a couple different versions of this story, and, like, I'm getting different things in the story. So the facts on this are really kind of sketchy.
They're
all over the place. Because we're dealing with reports coming out of Mexico.
yeah. And so then, you know, yesterday morning, it pops up. Alan Pulido is free.
Why?
Right. This is, right. Everything's good. Here's the story. Told police he punched one of the kidnappers, took the kidnapper's gun, shot the man before breaking through the safe house window and escaping. Previous reports had, of course, indicated the police saved him. No, it was all him. He told the press he was fine. He had a bandage on his hand.
Yeah.
Didn't clarify whether it was the punch, whatever.
Right.
So
he made it.
It's funny because one of the things I'm reading on Fox News right now, talking about this, that they talked to a security analyst in Mexico City. And this is, quote, there's some suspicious things about this story and how he was able to overpower these kidnappers,
you think,
right?
A little bit. Does anyone else a little thinking Bob Allenby when this first started?
I watch mystery shows on the TV.
One of the two things, quote, either he was the victim of the most incompetent kidnappers in the world, or there's something they don't want to reveal. His kidnappers were so stupid they didn't even blindfold him, tie his hands, or take his cell phone away.
Oh, you got to take the celly away.
Yeah.
Man, that's in the book.
Yeah.
What the hell?
And,
it's murder,
you know,
in itself.
Right?
Taken at 11:30 on Saturday night, right? First ransom comes in at like 1:30 p.m.
This seems kind of like another one right after. Yeah, like a Saving Silverman type of situation.
What's going on?
I don't know. I mean, listen, These things can be scary. It would not be the first time in Latin America that someone has been kidnapped.
No, that's a major deal down there.
Right, like that's
and especially where he's from, that it's extremely high because of the warring drug cartels. It's a very, very high kidnapping rate.
But this is an odd story.
Very odd.
Quite odd.
24 hours? Less, I mean...
Took his girlfriend, didn't really want her that badly.
Put her back.
And then they put her back.
Put her back.
I mean, maybe, you know, listen, if this whole thing ends up being true, then it's a 30 for 30.
Oh,
Gotta be.
Olympicos.
Right. Oh, are you kidding me?
But, yeah, this is one of those things. Because, you know, I like those crime shows and Datelines and
why
whatever.
Why is the A silent?
Yeah, exactly. It's spelled Olympiacos. That's still bugging me,
It's Olympicos.
Too.
That's just
but why is the A silent?
I don't know. You want to talk about Greek? You want to talk about Greek? I don't know. I want to talk about Latin.
You're the authority here.
I know how it's pronounced. That's the only thing.
It's not grass.
But, there was this Dateline on, because kidnapping in Mexico is, like we said,
it's a huge issue, especially
with athletes and rich people.
Yeah, and so there was a kidnapping years ago. She used to be an actress here in the United States, and I'm forgetting her name. But she married a Mexican that his family. Owned like one of the newspapers down there, and he was kidnapped and was gone for months. And they, you know, where she was trying everything to get together the ransom and all, so on and so forth. And they did like the whole where Dateline goes to the box that he was kept in, and they show from when he was dropped off in the pit. Like, it is a serious thing. So the fact that this literally was less than 24 hours, the whole thing is just very bizarre. And I feel like because of the conflicts in terms of the news reports of what happened and who was taken and who wasn't taken and all of these things. I feel like there's going to be more of a story. So I think either way, this is going to be a 30 for 30.
Whichever way
good
it goes.
Good or bad.
Hey, and I don't know if you saw, this isn't sportsy, but we got a minute left in the segment. As you see over the weekend, I'm sure you did, the gorilla in Ohio. That was the 4-year-old baby. A 4-year-old, 1-year-old?
Four years old.
Because they asked
the mother, and she said it was God's will for the gorilla to die, so everything is good.
Did she really say that?
She wrote that on Facebook.
But also, on top of that, before the child went into the gorilla enclosure, he was joking with his mother, like, I'm going to go in there.
No, the baby. Okay.
The child.
Well, no, that's why.
No, seriously.
I got you.
He was joking about sliding.
The gorilla's making faces.
Yeah, that's what. Okay, I got you.
He was joking about sliding, and I read this on CNN, joking about sliding under the little, like, fence, which, by the way, what's up with any zoo that you can slide into any kind of enclosure? I don't care. And then she.
What kind of a Jason Bourne-ass baby is that, by the way?
She turns around and is distracted by another child, which anyone that's gone to the zoo with your children, good for you, because it is chaos, utter chaos.
Are you
kidding me that your kid says it and then you turn around and you don't take it seriously? Like a 4-year-old child is actually going to follow through on a stupid idea? And the gorilla died.
Because 4-year-olds don't just disappear from under your nose ever.
The gorilla died, which, you know what, they're like, okay, yeah, we weren't sure if we had enough time to, you know, do the tranquilizer and if it would work and so on and so forth.
Well, he'd already been treating the kid like a rag doll for like 10 minutes.
Yeah, exactly. And it's sad. I didn't even want to watch the video.
I haven't. I can't do that.
I can't do it. But this is my thing. Please watch your children when you're taking them to the zoo.
Just want to say,
please watch your children.
It's a serious story, but there's a little part of me here that wants to remind you, I got so much garbage when my kids were 2 and 3 years old because I had the little harnesses on them.
Yeah.
I had little harnesses that were wrapped around my waist or my wife's waist. And everyone said, that's exactly what I said. You put a leash on you. You know what? You're damn right I put a leash on my kid. You know why? So stuff like that would not happen. I don't want to blame the parent or the I don't. That's for smarter people to do.
There's also that component of, like, my parents had that look, like, where parents develop the look where all you have to do is look at your child and you have put the fear of God into them without making a single verbal threat.
I got to be honest with you because you're right. But you know what? It really didn't take a look for me, even as a 4-year-old, to know not to go play with the gorilla.
Yeah.
Good point right there.
There's no look that either my parents had to give me to know that it was not okay to jump in the gorilla pit.
So Nate blames the kid.
Yes.
Nate blames Jason Bourne the baby.
Who
scooted over a moat and under a bridge and over a hill and all that stuff. Jeez, that's a horrible story.
You know what? There's so many things horrible with it.
We'll take a break. When we get back, there's a lot of stuff to break down. Steven Jackson, remember him, the basketball player? Yeah, he got loose over the weekend.
Oh, my God. Nice.
But first and foremost, hey, how about the local kid? That's right. I said local kid on top of the racing world. We'll tell you what we mean, and more of you should know what I mean than probably do because that's the state of this type of racing.
But I do.
We'll talk about that next. I know you do. It's The Drive, Sports 1140, Cage to Cage. Anybody ever hear of somebody, a Lil B? The whole Lil B, the bass god.
Is that the bass god?
Yeah.
The bass god.
Not the bass. The bass god.
Him and Kevin Durant have a thing, right?
They have a thing. He and James Harden had a thing. He cursed James Harden. He cursed Kevin Durant and the Warriors. Here's him talking about it yesterday.
With Kevin Durant, I really I'm looking to talk to the base god and see will this be lifted for next season. I feel the base god is a person of many lessons. For as we've seen, James Harden, who was cursed as well, we got into the playoffs for representation and for lessons. He ended up having the same amount of turnovers, which represented his same jersey number, which was just a crazy, you know, just a lot of crazy parallels from the base god. So, you know, I hope next year, the base guy will have some more leniency, and, you know, we can take the curse off indefinitely.
All right, so...
Wait, is he doing the third person thing?
Yeah, there's Lil B, and then there's the base god. So he has, as I understand it, Jay, feel free to help me here, he has conversations with the base god, and the base god basically blesses or curses different people. Now, James Harden, if I remember this...
I should have just made up some crazy crap about myself years ago.
You should have.
I missed the boat.
If I remember correctly, James Harden had stolen the Lil B move where he was stirring the soup.
Oh.
Okay.
It was called cooking.
Thank you.
Cooking.
Thank you very much. It was cooking.
Cooking.
And he got cursed, and they got knocked out of the playoffs. There is a large contingent, and I'm one of them, of very superstitious NBA fans that believe in these curses. That 100% believe in these curses, mainly because he's never been wrong.
Well, and you know.
I know.
P-Brain can't wrap their mind around reality.
Good point right there.
Dave.
So what Jay said while what Jay said off the air while that clip was playing is that Lil B's his guy and we could get him on. I was tweeting at him last night, all but begging for him, begging for him to look favorably upon the Sacramento Kings for next season. So let me just say, Jay, I absolutely, absolutely please would love to get Lil B on the show so we can find out if, in fact, he will bless the Sacramento Kings for next season because I believe he's the closest thing we have to basketball Jesus. That's how deeply I
and you think that's how Jesus works? Is
no,
you just ask and you'll receive?
I said basketball Jesus.
Well, I mean, I'm just
basketball
well, I mean,
Jesus
I'm just
is different.
Wondering here, like, did someone ask him about James Harden? I mean, you kind of made it sound like he speaks with this voice in his head, and the voice tells him what to
think. I
think
that's what it is.
So, how selfish of you to think that your mere solicitation of goodwill towards the Kings is going to swing the entire space-time fabric of the base god here.
I have a weird feeling that the more you honor the base god, the more likely he is to bless your franchise.
Okay, so...
Katie's about
to
throw up over there.
Katie's got the look.
No idea what is happening
right now.
Never
heard of base god. It's a big thing.
Oh, of course.
It's really a big thing.
I mean, but seriously, you didn't hear the James Harden thing, and Kevin, you didn't know anything about that until now?
No. Right. Yeah.
And you know what? I don't feel like I missed out.
Oh, you missed out.
Dude. No, I didn't.
I'm a huge superstition guy.
Well, I mean, you missed out on this entire conversation.
This is the thing. I'm not a superstitious person at all. It actually completely annoys me when
athletes are any way.
No.
Like there's not even a little thing you did. Not even because I'm not a superstitious person, but I will be damned if I ever step on a chalk line on a softball or baseball field. I will never walk across a groomed infield. I will never play catch.
Guess what?
Parallel to the line. You always go perpendicular.
You should never have told me that.
Why?
Because Wednesday, when we go to play in our CBS softball game, I'm
going to
drag you out there, and I'm just going to do a dance on the chalk line.
Well, you can't.
I'm just going to do a dance.
You can, but that's not him.
That's true.
But we're never going to win a game all season.
So there's
the reigning MVP who is sitting in front of me right now is gonna go down and
break
softball.
A leg or something.
History is the worst player ever now.
What happens when you take a softball to the dome because you were dancing on the chalk line?
Please.
Well, I'm just saying.
Okay.
No, that has everything to do with the fact that my reflexes are crap.
You don't tempt the thing upon the thing that sits on the thing.
It's true.
Okay, I don't believe in superstitions. I don't. I don't like it when athletes are like, oh,
I don't either, but
I have to wear the
same
socks, or I have to put the left shoe on before the right shoe, or I've got it. Like, all of that crap is an excuse for you to make something of the fact that you screwed the pooch. All right?
You messed up. Well, aren't you going to like to have an excuse when you eat crap on Wednesday?
You shot 20%.
All right, damn it. Before we go, I got to do this here. All right, here we go.
Alexander Rossi for the final time. It's his turn number four. Here he comes, Mark James.
He may have to coast it across the finish line. Alexander Rossi almost rolling to a dead stop. Twin checkers are out, and the rookie will win the 100th Indianapolis 500-mile race.
Alexander Rossi fighting off guys like Munoz and Tony Kanaan, coasts past the finish line. They figured it out that he was running low on gas. He ran out of gas before he could get back to pit row, and he was born in Auburn, California. 24-year-old rookie wins the Indy 500 in his first attempt. Watch the Sacramento Republic in the next round of the Lamar Hunt U.S. Open Cup Wednesday. That's this Wednesday, Bonnie Field, 8 p.m. tomorrow. Purchase tickets for the match at SacRepublicFC.com. For Nate, for Jay, for Katie, I'm Dave. Jim Rome is next. We'll see you at 6 a.m. tomorrow on The Drive, Sports 1140 KHDK.